Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Okay, yes, let us begin. Okay, it's funny I said I was ready, but I'm really not. Is it my turn to start?
It is.
I don't have the right piece of paper in front of me. Okay, hey everybody, I'm Kai Rizdal. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make the day make sense. I can do that bit from memory.
You can. Hi, I'm Kimberly Adams. Thank you for joining us. What do you say all the time? Audio professionals.
That's right.
Thank you for joining us. It is Monday. Happy Monday to all. Like us, you know, Mondays can be a little bit hard to get it going. We may not have it all together, but we're going to survive the week. We're going to start off the week by diving into some stories of the day slash the weekend, also known as the news fix. And then we will talk about a story or two that made us smile. And Kai, yours is kind of the news of the weekend, so why don't you start?
It's amazing. So obviously, I'm talking about the balloon shootdowns or the cylindrical object shootdown or the we don't really know what they are shootdown. So I want to do two things. Number one is point out just how absolutely amazing it is that the press secretary to the president of the United States has to get up at the lectern. Or is it dais? Lectern? Podium? Never mind. That's not important right now. Has to stay. It's not important. I'm sure you know the answer, but.
I don't actually, but I was going to say, I'm sure that someone will tell us.
Somebody does. Anyway, Karine Jean-Pierre stands up today and says, we have no indications that these are aliens, which, oh my God, right? So that's number one. Number two, though, is why are we seeing them all now? And I think it would be really helpful if I spent literally less than 60 seconds, but just taking a minute to explain why we're seeing them now. So we have an immense radar umbrella over North America. Thank you, Cold War and the Soviet Union and all of that stuff, right? And we have radars sweeping the skies at all hours of the day and night. But those radars are not tuned. That is a layman's term, but that's an appropriate analogy here. Those radars are not tuned to see things that are moving really, really slowly. They're tuned to see missiles. They're tuned to see aircraft. That is to say, things moving hundreds, perhaps thousands of miles per hour. So what happened after the big not weather balloon over Montana last weekend that we could practically see with like a pair of binoculars is that NORAD adjusted what are called the velocity gates on their radars. And this is from the commander of NORAD, the North American Radar Defense Force, right? He said this over the weekend. They adjusted their velocity gates so that they can now, they have retuned their radars so that they are now looking for things that move 4, 5, 6, 20 miles an hour. And that is why we're seeing and shooting down so many more of these things, because we can see them now. Now, of course, it's mildly terrifying that they may have been there for years and years and years and years and years and we hadn't seen them, but that's why we are seeing them now. If you are wondering, as I was, why are we seeing all these things now? That's what's going on.
That is wild. And how high up are these things? Because my thought was, you know, I get why the commercial pilots might not have seen them, but what about all the recreational and, like, you know, small craft pilots and things like that?
Right. Right. So the one I think over Lake Huron was 20,000 feet. The one over Alaska was 40,000 feet. And then obviously the big not weather balloon that started this whole thing was at 60,000 feet. So they are in varying altitudes.
Too high.
It's too high for a lot of civilian aircraft, the 60,000 foot one. And, you know, nobody in a Piper Cub is going up to 20,000 feet to poke around. Yeah, it's just it's so
they really
weird
found the sweet spot, didn't they?
They kind of did. They kind of did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have an interview running on tech tomorrow with a former intelligence person who was saying how, you know, in many ways this is like 9/11 in that it's just revealed this wide open gap in the security
intelligence
infrastructure.
Failure. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yeah, because, I mean, you think you've accounted for everything, and it's like, just kidding, not this thing. And, you know, adjust, constantly adjusting. Mm-hmm. And I do not envy the folks who have to do that work and are doing their best. Okay.
So there you go.
Let's see. So is your Twitter one also the same thing?
Oh, that's the same one. That's the same one. That's the source of the data. But, yeah, that's Dan Lamoth at the Washington Post who pointed out this VelocityGate thing.
So my news fix is something that has sort of been, I'm not going to use the word percolating, that's terrible, but sort of going on over the last week or so, but hasn't gotten so much attention, but is actually deeply horrifying, which is this environmental disaster in Ohio. You may have sort of seen it, you know, kind of flash by about the train derailment, right? And how there was this big train derailment. It was carrying all these chemicals. They did a, you know, sort of controlled burn to try to burn off some of these chemicals. But this is actually really, to an unknown extent, a very serious environmental disaster affecting the people in this relatively low-income area of Ohio. These chemicals are extraordinarily toxic. They're burning off. They're in the environment. People are saying their pets are dying. But, you know, the local officials are saying, like, you can drink the water. And then they were like, maybe you shouldn't. And they're going back and forth about it. And, you know, it's this area called East Palestine, Ohio. And now, you know, there's all these scientists and different people talking to the local news, and people are just trying to figure out, like, is it safe to breathe the air? Is it safe to breathe the water? And, you know, one of the experts that this local news channel, WKBN 27, talked to said it's possible that some of these chemicals could still be present in homes and objects until you clean them thoroughly. There's a lot of what ifs. We're going to be looking at this thing 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line and wondering, gee, cancer clusters could pop up and, you know, well water could go bad. We've got, you know, chemicals like, I'm going to butcher these pronunciations, ethylene glycol monobutyl ether, ethyl hexyl acrylate. I mean, words that sound frightening, that have low boiling points, that are dangerous, that are a part of a lot of things we use every day, but are not designed for us to be inhaling them or inhaling their fumes when they're on fire or, you know, when they contaminate water. And in the neighborhood where I grew up in St. Louis, not while I was still living there, but years later, there was a chemical plant that had a really bad fire, and it ended up like shooting like mini bombs into the neighborhood. And there were so many cancer cases. And, you know, I'm not going to say that those are direct cause, because I'm sure that's a liability thing in lawsuits that are still ongoing. But there were a lot of cancer cases where people sued the company saying that these exposure to these chemicals, you know, caused their cancer later on. And it's a bad situation and isn't getting a ton of attention, but it's pretty scary. And the other story that I'm linking to, which is just weird, is some of the residents of this area were actually helped make this movie and be extras in a movie in 2021 called White Noise, which was a Netflix movie about a train derailment sending chemicals into the air. And, you know, it says there's a freight train collided with a tanker truck, triggering an explosion that fills the air with dangerous toxins. And it was shot around Ohio and is based on a novel by Don DeLillo and was published in 1985, shortly after a chemical disaster in India that killed nearly 4,000 people. The book and film follow the fictional Gladney family as they flee an airborne toxic event and then return home to try to resume their normal lives. And a lot of the people in this area apparently were extras in this film, and now it's happening to them.
Oh, man.
It's wild.
That is not great. That is not great. Ugh.
No, it's not.
Sorry, there's Bonzai.
Hi, Bonzai.
Oh, well.
Speaking of which, I'm in the process of trying to Bonzai a wisteria.
Really?
Yes, I ordered a vine and I wrapped it in wire last weekend and I've got it in its little shape. And I actually have it in a pot that Sabri made. I'm very excited about it.
Oh, so we should give Sabri the plug here, right? He is, in addition to being a great host and reporter, he's also an amazing, I guess he's a potter, right?
Astonishing potter.
Or a ceramics artist. Yeah, he does amazing stuff. So, God,
beautiful,
I forget what his...
Beautiful work.
Yeah, look him up on Instagram or we'll put it on the show.
Well, I'm sure we can link to his handle or something. His work is really beautiful.
It's crazy. It's so good. Wait, doesn't bonsai take like years to do and do you have that much time? Well, I mean, I guess you do.
Ideally, I hope. I mean, wow, Kai.
Well, that came out wrong.
I mean, unless you know something that I don't. So the National Arboretum here in D.C. has an amazing bonsai exhibit that's just ongoing. And they've got trees there that are, you know, date back to the 1600s they started getting trained.
Right.
But you can bonsai just about any tree, apparently. And I'm not an expert. I'm sure there's people listening who are. Right. But basically, you can do it for as long as you grow the tree. But if you get something that's like super fast growing, like a wisteria, as long as you get it into its shape and keep up with the trimming and the watering and the care and everything like that, you know, you can end up with something that looks decent in, you know, not decades, but, you know, when shorter periods of time. But I don't know. We'll see. I'm just starting out and trying and going down YouTube rabbit holes with it. So keep you updated.
Totally. Fair enough. Good. Good.
All right. That's a good segue to a smile.
There we go. He was like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Let's move along. Okay.
Well, you have
so
multimedia.
As happens, speaking of rabbit holes, I went down one today, and somehow this crossed my social media feed. It's it was a TikTok, but it showed up on my Instagram reel because that's just the way these things work. Mm. The guy you're about to hear is named Michael Oxton, and he's one of the co-founders of a company called Night Shift Brewing. They are now in Everett, Massachusetts, I believe. And he was talking about AI and beer. Let's hit that first clip, Drew.
We asked ChatGPT to come up with some creative names for the beer, and it did, but they were a little boring. So we challenged it to come up with more self-aware names that reference the fact that the beer was made by artificial intelligence. That's when it spit out AIPA, which is so good, but a little terrifying.
Right? AIPA. I apologize for the sound effects in the background there. I sort of didn't compute on that one. But anyway, yeah, so he said, listen, we asked ChatGPT to come up with a beer recipe. So it made them a beer recipe. It made them a hazy IPA. It's going to be called AIPA, which is simply brilliant. It's actually going to market. He goes into this TikTok on how they came up with the can art, the label art for this thing. And then he closes with this.
We're releasing AIPA next week. Unless the robots say otherwise.
It was super cute. Well done. If I were on the East Coast, I would get a can of AIPA just because I could. It makes some sense, right? It makes some sense. But they're in Massachusetts. They're in Everett, Massachusetts. They're available up and down the East Coast. But here's a broader
point. See if I can get some for you and save it.
That would be very, very lovely of you to do. Here's the bigger point, though. So we did this whole show about AI and what it means and kids doing their homework assignments and this and that. But look, if you're going to have AI make your beer, then why even bother, right? Because let's set aside kids not wanting to do their homework. Part of what this replaces is the creative process, right? And this guy and his friends literally built a company on their hobby of making beer at night after work. And now AI can do it. And is that any fun? I don't know.
I don't know. Is it a tractor?
Am I being too serious? That's entirely possible.
I think you're right. But I also think that there are lots of very creative and interesting things that have been replaced by technology that find a way to still survive. And there's an example close to mine because a couple weeks ago, I took a calligraphy class, right?
Oh, wow.
We do not need calligraphy in this world.
That is true.
That is a technique and a skill that has been long replaced by technology. You know, you do not have to hand letter wedding invitations or anything. You don't have to know how to do calligraphy for any meaningful reason other than it's something you like to do and makes you feel fancy, right? But it still exists
totally
because it has gone from something that is a thing needed for work. Like if you wanted to invite 500 people to an event, you used to need a calligrapher so you didn't look like, you know, somebody dumb and your stuff looked okay.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need that anymore, which means rather than people having to do it for work, people choose to do it as an art form. So you can have beer that is made by a machine, made by an AI, the recipe comes from wherever, or it could come from a team of research scientists who simply tailored the recipe to maximize the amount of money that they make off of the beer for the cheapest ingredients that will still sell based on people's taste interest, you know, and that's not special mm-hmm. or creative or nice. But then you have craft beers and people who do it for fun because they love it. And so I think as technology replaces some of these things, it shifts it from something you have to do that people choose to do. And then it can really be fun. Sabri makes beautiful pottery not because we need it to carry water, but because he likes it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That enough. Was a rant. Sorry.
All right. Yeah, you're good to go. Go ahead.
All right, fine. So speaking of things on Instagram that are also on TikTok, there is a chef on Instagram who I follow named Brittany Wang, who goes by Chef Bao Bei, and makes beautiful dumplings. And I love dumplings. And one of my pandemic activities was teaching myself how to make dumplings. And she has this lovely video about making rose dumplings for Valentine's Day. And she basically uses, you know, the dough from the dumpling and the little filling to make the petals of the roses and then uses food coloring and steams them and makes these really pretty dumplings that look like little rosebuds.
Nice.
And that just makes me happy. And I will eventually try this one day. Not this week, but eventually.
Perhaps not. You do a lot of good extracurricular stuff. That's kind of cool. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it helps me turn my brain off from things. So,
yeah,
you know,
I hear
it's
you.
Nice.
I hear you.
For extracurricular activities for this show, we're going to talk about fundraising.
All-time segue right there. All-time segue.
Yes. Look, for all of the random things that we bring to the show, from Kai's, you know, expertise about all things military and my random tangents on the role of technology in society, we only do this show because of you all, and we would really appreciate your support with a monthly donation if you can and if you're able today. And in return, now through Valentine's Day, aka tomorrow, while I cannot promise you a rose-shaped dumpling, we do have investor t-shirts with our logo on the front, and on the back it says I'm invested in Marketplace, and we are not going to be giving these out anywhere else, so it is available right now and you can get it only on our donation form starting at $5 a month.
Marketplace.org/givesmart is how you do that. Marketplace.org/givesmart, and if you do, we'll be your friends forever. And we'll be here.
You can show your love for Marketplace.
That's right.
Yes, this is true.
That's right.
All right. One more time. Marketplace.org/givesmart.
Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Today's program was engineered by Drew Jostedt. Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter. Our intern is Antonio Barreras.
Marissa Cabrera is our acting senior producer. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts. And Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital. You can tell I've given deep thoughts to this AI thing, right?
Yeah, well, you know, that's good for you. Good for you. That's great. It's important.
I've been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah. Definitely worthy of a lot of thought, for sure.
Mm.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.